It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com.
Hi, fans. This is Don Fisher, the radio voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. IU football tickets are on sale now for the 2018 season. Indiana hosts 7 home games this fall in newly expanded Memorial Stadium. Don't miss any of the action as the Hoosiers take on the Cardinals of Ball State, the Virginia Cavaliers, and 5 Big Ten opponents, including Michigan State, Iowa, Penn State, Maryland, and the Purdue Boilermakers. For ticket information, visit IUHoosiers.com today. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I are joined by Brendan Quinn, who covers Michigan and Michigan State basketball for The Athletic, as we begin our tour around the Big Ten, previewing Indiana's conference opponents for the upcoming season. Brendan was recently out in Spain with the Wolverines, and so we talk with him about his takeaways, what he learned being up close with the Wolverines, and then we also talk with him about Michigan State and how they will deal with the departures of Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson. So all of that coming here on this edition of Podcast on the Brink. Before we get to that conversation with Brendan, I do want to talk a little bit about SeatGeek, our sponsor for this episode. As you know, football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Imagine if you had gone to the IU-Michigan game a few years back when Indiana had that 26-0 run to end the first half. You'd have to be up at Chrysler Arena in Ann Arbor, but we've got some IU fans up there, so imagine if you'd been there in person. Or imagine if you'd been in Bloomington last year when Indiana played Michigan State and Freddie McSwain had 16 rebounds, 9 of them offensive, and Indiana almost beat the Spartans. Oh, so close. Those moments would have been so much better to be there in person. And SeatGeek is the place to go when you want to get tickets, when you want to be there in person, because SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites and grades every ticket based on value, so they help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. That's why I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It is my go-to when I want to buy Mavericks tickets. I live down here in Dallas. If I want to buy baseball tickets, if I want to buy concert tickets, all of which I've done on SeatGeek. And which is why I feel comfortable recommending them to you, because I use them and have always really enjoyed the experience. So SeatGeek is the way to go. And best of all, listeners to Podcast on the Brink like you get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. And now, here's our conversation with Brendan Quinn, previewing Michigan and Michigan State. And we are here with Brendan Quinn, who covers Michigan and Michigan State for The Athletic. And Brendan, welcome back to Podcast on the Brink. Always great to have you here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it, as always.
So you recently accompanied the Michigan basketball team to Spain on their foreign tour. So let's start with the Wolverines. They went 1-2 on this trip. What were some of your biggest takeaways from watching the team up close out there in Spain?
It's very much a group finding its way. I'd say the talent level is fairly high. But, you know, I do think people might underestimate just what this team is losing. Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman, Moritz Wagner, Duncan Robinson, like those guys not only put up numbers, right, that they did score, they did a large portion of the team's scoring last year, I think like 38% or something like that. But they also, they just played a lot over the last 3 years. You know, those guys, they won a lot of games. They played a lot of games. They were in large part responsible for, you know, a lot of on the court direction of just people knowing where they're going, people knowing what they're doing, how to communicate what the coaches are saying to the younger guy. You know, they were huge, huge pieces that are now being not only replaced, but kind of being replaced by a fleet of freshmen. There's five first-year players in the program, and the only other time that that's happened since I've been here was, I guess the 2015 season. That was the Cam Chapman, DJ Wilson, Ricky Doyle. I'm missing two guys off the top of my head, but you know, this is a program, I think, that you want to just have a lot of returners, and that those are the guys who know what they're doing. They know the system. This group is kind of, I think, going to fly a little bit by the seat of their pants early on, and that really showed in Spain. There were games where you kind of saw guys pointing at each other and talking to each other, and everyone was going everywhere and nowhere. You know, not a, I should say a small portion of the overall offense has been installed. The defense is just kind of trying to carry over whatever it can from last year. But they do have a high talent level. There's going to be a lot of names that I think you guys are going to get to know in short order, starting with Ignas Brazdeikis. You know, they have some guys, they have some talent. It's going to be really interesting just to see how it actually comes together. And there are a number of rotation possibilities that I still think will have to play itself out once the season gets underway. I think it could be a team that looks completely different come February compared to November.
Ignas Brazdeikis. Alex and I were just commenting to each other in our private chat that we didn't know how to pronounce that name. So I appreciate you taking that pressure off us for us right there. He, you know, I read your 10 takeaways column on The Athletic, and he really jumped out. He was the number 40 recruit, according to 24/7, coming in. And it sounds like he really stepped in with an attitude to just come out and really be assertive. Tell us a little bit more about him and what kind of impact you think he can have as a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, he's built like an upperclassman. He's 6'7", 215 in every bit of it. Michigan's strength and conditioning coach, John Sanderson, has already told him that he's no longer allowed to bench press. You know, he's big enough as it is. They don't want him to get any bigger. His father's a lifelong MMA fighter. So he is a physical guy. He grew up in it. He plays straightforward. He gets the ball, he goes at the basket. You know, there was, I wrote at one point on one of the bus trips, I was talking to two kind of longtime staffers in the program, and we were trying to come up with an apt comparison for who Brazdeikis plays like in the Big Ten from the last 15 years. And I mean, we're talking, this was like a half an hour conversation. And we really, really couldn't come up with a guy that fits. You know, he's a 6'7", straight ahead guard who he is not reliant on the 3-point shot. In three games overseas, he led the team in scoring, but did not attempt a three. He wants to attack you head on. He will probably lead the team in free throw attempts. And will probably be a guy who finishes top three in field goal attempts. He has some sneaky athleticism. He can control the ball with both hands. He's a natural right-hander, but shoots lefty. In his mind, he thinks he's James Harden. That's how he wants to play. Obviously, that's a big sentence, but there isn't a box that you can kind of put him in. Like, if when he walks on the floor, you would probably think that he's a stretch four. And Michigan will play him at the floor, at the four. He's split time there. When we were over there, and I saw there were times where he would just be getting, you know, directions every other possession. You're at the two, you're at the four, you're at the two, you're at the four. And his head was kind of spinning. So, there were a lot of times he wasn't exactly positive of where to go. And when he is in that spot, his default is just to attack. And then that's what he typically does. So big, brutal left-handed guard. The best comparison we could come up with, and this was from Sanderson, who played at Ohio State. He was Michael Redd's roommate, and has now been around Michigan for like 8 years or something. He came up with Brazdeikis would be the love child of Calvert Chaney and Brian Cardinal. So
whoa,
those are some significant names, obviously. But you know, that's the best that he could do. So he's a really interesting player, and like you guys alluded to, you know, he talks. He is extremely confident. When I asked him his goals for the year, it was Big Ten Freshman of the Year and first team all conference and win a national championship. And there was like, and I kind of gave him a look like, you know, when I put that in a quote, people are going to kind of raise their eyes. And he said, well, you know, how people react to me is their problem. That's not really my problem. So he's kind of got that. He's got a little Stauskas to him. He's got a lot of confidence. I'm sure he's going to say stuff that will kind of rile people up. I think he fits nicely in replacing Mo Wagner as kind of a league villain.
Brendan, what was the impact of John Beilein not being on this trip from Michigan? Obviously, it's valuable time for the players more than anything else. But what impact was there with Beilein unable to make the trip?
It was really interesting because the staff, as it is, the three assistant coaches, Saadi Washington, Luke Jaklic, DeAndre Haynes, they've combined for 4 years working under John. Last year was the first year for Haynes and Jaklic, and Saadi has been there for 2 years. So there wasn't like the natural guy who's been under Beilein, who is kind of a hologram of him overseas. They were very much open with the fact to tell the players, like, we have to learn how to do this the same way you are right now. And that's how it kind of went as a group. I think it was probably a little less structured. And I mean that more in the sense of, you know, be here at this time, be there at this time. We're going to watch film this day. We're going to do this day. We're going to do this on the court, you know, basketball. I think it was a much lighter overall trip. And now that's me saying that when I haven't spent 9 days with the program with John there. I've spent 24 hours with the program with John there, but never this amount of time. But just talking to people about what it would be like with John there, what it would be like, or how it's different without him there. That was kind of the general sense I got, is that, you know, the coaches had to kind of find their voice a little bit. Saadi Washington is a low key-ish guy, and that showed in his first game coaching. He's kind of was just pacing the sidelines and taking it in and kind of thinking it out. And by the third game, into it, yelling, giving the refs, you know, the business, way more vocal. So everyone kind of grew into their roles a little bit, but, you know, ideally you want John Beilein there for any benefits that you could have from guys trying to learn their own way, you know, a class kind of coming into its own way with a substitute teacher or whatever. With John there, you know, it's just a different level of adjustments being made, rotations being used, counters to counters, all these things that he's known for that I'm sure you'd like to get, especially the freshman. You'd just like to get him a taste of what it's like to play under him. Overall, though, I wouldn't say it's a huge detriment. And first things first, you know, he had to take care of his health. So it was something that had to happen.
Looking at Michigan's roster for this coming season, you know, Duncan Robinson's graduated, obviously, and has landed in the NBA. Mo Wagner, the same thing. And then you mentioned Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman being gone as well. Who on this roster is Michigan's go-to guy at this point? Is it Charles Matthews? Is it somebody else based on what you saw in Spain?
I think it'll be a combination of, well, first and foremost, Matthews, yes. But then also Jordan Poole and Brett Dacus. Those are going to be guys that have to take a lot of shots. Poole is really the only guy who you would circle as being a, you know, toe the line, shoot the shot, 3-point guy. They really don't have that. This last year, I think Abdul Rahman, Wagner, and Robinson combined to make just under 60% of Michigan's total threes. And there are not guys that you say, okay, just slide right into that role and you just take all those shots and give them to these guys. You take all those field goals and give them to these guys, but not 3-pointers, right? I don't see Charles Matthews being a guy who can go out and take 150, 160 threes. It's going to have to be a downhill team that draws fouls, attacks the basket, spaces defenses, attack the gaps. That's what this group has to be. They went 7-for-40 on threes in Spain, and I don't think that it only had to do with the ball and the line being back a couple inches. It's just not a natural 3-point shooting team. So, you know, the offense is going to have to come from a variety of new pieces. But in terms of the 3-point shooting, that's just not replicable, I don't think, this time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Brennan, let's turn our attention to the Spartans. And in most of the, you know, preseason Big Ten rankings that I'm seeing, it's Michigan State, Michigan 1 and 2. You look at Michigan State, obviously they lose a lot off of last year's team in terms of Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson. The guy that I want to start off talking about is a guy that to me is one of the most intriguing players in the conference, and that's Cassius Winston, whose efficiency numbers were absolutely phenomenal last year. And I found it interesting that most people are just anointing Carson Edwards as the best guard in the conference, and he's really good, but I feel like, you know, maybe Cassius Winston should be getting some of that pub as well. Talk to us a little bit about him and what you expect from him now that he's an upperclassman.
I agree. I've always been really, really high on Winston's game. He is an extremely high level point guard and basically every offensive asset that you want. You're right. I mean, efficiency is just off the charts. The defense is lacking and they need more there, but I've always thought that he's a potential All-American talent, and this year will be really interesting to kind of see how the ball moves and operates with Winston being the guy, because no matter what, the last 2 years the ball had to go through Bridges, and he was a guy who really couldn't create that much off the dribble. He had his skill sets, but he also had his shortcomings. It was just it just always seemed as a weird way to kind of operate the offense through. And then last year was obviously confounding with them. They're trying to go through Bridges, and then you have this kind of this weird talent in Jaren Jackson who has all the skills in the world but never really fit what they did. He's kind of the stretch big guy in a program that doesn't really use stretch big guys. Now I think it's more of a traditional offensive look for State, and it starts with Winston. And if he's the guy that everything is born out of, I think it really can bridge the gap talent-wise when you talk about losing two lottery picks and this team still having the continuity of being able to keep its level of success up. A 30-win team last year, regardless of how it finished, still won a lot of games. So, but Winston has to he needs to take another step in terms of being a guy who wants the ball in certain situations. I think he had some moments last year where he would lead comebacks and do all this stuff, but then at the end of the day, he'd have to defer when it counted most, right? So now it's not going to be the case. It's him. It's Joshua Langford. I like college teams that start in the backcourt, and Michigan State is kind of going back to being a team that starts in the backcourt. I think it will be really advantageous for them with Langford and Winston in those spots.
So who do you think benefits most from the departure of Jackson and Bridges and the opportunity that it opens up? And is there anybody who you think may struggle with the increased attention, the bigger role that they'll now have with those guys gone?
It's an interesting question. In terms of benefiting from, I wonder if this allows for more fitting stuff to be drawn up for Joshua Langford and the way that he excels as a spot up shooter. He's not a guy who he can create his own shot. It's been shown, but it just doesn't happen consistently. I think he is prone to taking just a lot of shots that analytically, and I'm not the big analytics guy, but analytically, there's nothing worse in my book than long twos. And he takes a obscene amount of long twos. And I've never really been able to tell if that's just his shots, how much of it is residual from what's being run. But if without Bridges being, taking the lion's share of shots, I do wonder if they can just draw some better stuff up to put Langford in situations where his skills can really shine, because he is one of the best just pure shooters that you'll see. It's just, a lot of he just takes a lot of bad looks sometimes. So maybe that's beneficial. It'll be really curious to see how this works out for Nick Ward, because he's a guy who wants to step away from the basket and show NBA scouts that he's not just strictly a low block scorer. But anyone who's watched Tom Izzo's program for the last 20 years is going to have a hard time envisioning Nick Ward being used as anything other than a low post big. So, what happens to him with both of these pieces taken out of the picture? He played 1 year with Bridges at the four, and he played last year with Bridges at the three and Jaren Jackson as a, kind of quasi four or five at any given time. So, I'm not sure what it will do for Nick Ward, but in terms of length, though, the defense is certainly going to take a step back. Miles Bridges is an outstanding athlete who, I don't think anyone ever would ever call him a lockdown defender, but physically he's always going to be one of the best athletes anywhere he goes. He can get rebounds. He can do a lot of things. And then Jaren Jackson, obviously, you're taking a complete game changer out of the picture. On the defensive side of the ball, a guy who I don't think anyone would say when, Michigan State was just an unbelievable defensive team personnel wise last year. Yet you look at the numbers and Michigan State is, I want to say they were like a top 10 defensive efficiency team.
They were 10th.
Year.
Yeah. They were 10th.
10th. There you go. So, that's Jaren Jackson. It's Jaren Jackson on the back line being one of the best shot blockers in the country and just intimidating the hell out of anyone 12 feet from the basket.
Brendan, I want to go back to Joshua Langford for a second, because I believe he was a McDonald's All-American five-star recruit. Mm-hmm. And his numbers to this point, I guess the lazy thing to do that some of us do, myself included, you see a five-star recruit, McDonald's All-American, you think, well, this guy's going to be one or two and done and on to the league. Mm-hmm. That's obviously not the case with this kid. Is it what does he need to do? You talked about the long twos, but is he ever going to be a guy who's going to come out and average 17, 18 points a game? Or is what we've seen the first 2 years out of him basically what he's going to be as a player?
No, I think he does have a step forward to take. He's highly, highly skilled. If put in the right position, I think he will be able to look a lot closer to the guy that people thought he was going to be. a lot of his freshman year was derailed by injury. He was never right. He hurt his leg or his hip. So I'm failing to remember right now. I want to say his hip. Early in his freshman year, and he was basically a half step slow all year round. I think he just needs to dial it up. As simple as that sounds, sometimes you watch him run around an offensive set sometimes, and it would just seem like he just wasn't getting around a screen to catch a ball in that, you know, catch shoot situation. He would be a half second slow, and it would be catch, and then the offense would stall. He just needs to be a guy, I think, who is more aggressive, and maybe who understands when it's his time to do what, if that makes sense. There'd be a lot of times where he would just, you know, he would take a long jumper on like a 2-on-1 break, and you're just sitting there like, that's not, you know, I know how smart you are because I've had conversations with you, but that's just not a shot you take there. And then other times he would catch and hesitate, and you're like, well, that's a pure shot right there, you know, or you're missing that opportunity. He just never seemed entirely comfortable being himself in the offense. And maybe that has to do with the pieces that have been around him. And now this year can alleviate some of that. It'll be really interesting to see, but, I do think his best days are ahead of him. And I based on a conversation I had with him middle of the summer, he seems to get it, and he seems to understand what this year means and what his career has been thus far. You know, a lot of guys who have done much less than him entered their name in the draft just because they're supposed to enter their name in the draft and they should go take a look at it. He flat out said to me, he's like, I haven't done anything. You know, I haven't proven in any way that I'm not, that I'm ready to go to the league. So, you know, I'm not going to go and test the waters just for the sake of doing so. I have a lot to work on, and it would have been, you know, probably a waste of my time and their time. So, you know, I needed to work, and that's what I've been doing. And they, you know, sounded like the right answer to me. I'll tell you that much. So, he's a guy who has to be counted on. If this team is going to be a second weekend team in the NCAA tournament, Joshua Langford has to be Joshua Langford for sure.
You know, it's been such a strange and controversial and checkered year for Michigan State athletics. And, you know, Tom Izzo is a guy who has had such a sterling reputation for a long time. And it felt like that really took a hit over the last year. How is his mindset? Will any of that linger into the season? Do you think, is he kind of putting that behind him? Where do you think he stands entering this year?
I think the scars will be very slow to heal, we'll say. A lot of people around Michigan State feel like last year was taken from them. The thing that is difficult to talk about last year at Michigan State is the fact that everything for so long has been conflated. And it's the Larry Nassar scandal on one side, and then entirely separate from that is, you know, the accusations levied by ESPN, and then the immediate rush to go after Michigan State to find out what happened in instances, to find out if there were cultural issues there, to find out if past sexual assault claims were handled properly, and a lot of people at Michigan State, in and out of the athletic department, felt that, you know, it was ESPN kind of striking while the iron was hot and using the Nassar thing to blow up the other thing. And now we're not going to unpack all of it. I'll be on your podcast until next week. But the way that thing unfolded, and Tom Izzo being, you know, constantly asked about it by people, including myself, it was undoubtedly a distraction on that team. And it carried an enormous weight and an enormous burden for those players And then Miles Bridges' name pops up in the Yahoo report on the FBI stuff. And it was just, it was one thing after another, and it was all negative. There was just an enormous amount of negativity around the program that meanwhile was ranked fifth in the country and just kept winning games. You know, they won like 13 straight games or something ridiculous amid all of that. And, you know, those guys felt like, you talk to them now and they say it was really hard and it did take a toll. But it was still a successful year and da, 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 da. But, you know, there will always be people who wonder if that team could have won a national championship if everything didn't go sideways the way that it did. As for Izzo personally, he's kind of been, in my opinion, he's been kind of stuck as someone wearing someone else's skin for a long time, where he's always been one of the most outspoken coaches in the country. And he is now been incredibly quiet and behind closed doors. And he does talk to a number of people, but he hasn't spoken on the record in a very long time. And he hasn't answered anything specific about some of the claims made by ESPN. Now, what I think is about to happen is, with the ruling of the NCAA last week saying that there's no reason for further inquiry into NCAA rules violations at Michigan State, that will be a window to try to reintroduce some normalcy to Michigan State. And what version of Tom Izzo emerges from that, I know I'm very interested to see, and a lot of people are really interested to see. It's a long answer to a complicated question, but I hope that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Brendan, Jared mentioned earlier that Michigan State and Michigan are the two teams that a lot of the preseason predictions for whatever they're worth are, you know, putting at the top of the Big Ten at this point. But as someone who follows the league as closely as anyone, if there were two or three other teams that you're, you know, if you had had to predict that have a chance to win the league or contend this coming season, who would those teams be?
I mean, in fairness, I haven't gone deep enough into making my preseason picks and all that stuff, but I think the league is overall going to be down a little bit. But I am most interested, and I would say, I'll say high on, if you want to talk about possible contenders. I like Wisconsin. I like Indiana. I am curious about Ohio State and Purdue, but I think it's a weird league. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but it seems like every year I go into this and I'm like, man, just nothing jumps out at me. I don't really like any of these teams. But then by the end of the year, you see some teams emerge, like Ohio State out of nowhere last year. But like, is this a year that like Nebraska finishes second or like Iowa comes out of nowhere? That's the problem with the Big Ten, is like, it's always going to be like two or three outliers among the top six that just in the beginning of the season, you think have no business being there. And I'm not even that sold on Michigan and Michigan State. I think they could both be pretty good. I also think they could both finish 9-9.
Is there, last question for you, Brendan, before we wrap up, just kind of on, you know, kind of that same tact, is there an individual player maybe who's a little bit under the radar that you're really interested to watch this year, maybe to see grow, that's kind of your sleeper breakout pick around the conference, or, you know, maybe it's a player from Michigan, Michigan State too?
Well, I'll stick to the teams that I cover right now. At Michigan State, I am probably, if we're talking a sleeper player, I'd probably be most interested in Gabe Brown, who's a freshman. Maybe Gabe Brown, maybe Aaron Henry, two freshmen there, who, you know, they don't really get love. And when people talk about the best freshman in the league and they're not, they don't, at least to me, they don't seem to generate too much attention. Even a guy like Foster Lawyer might get more attention from of the Michigan State freshman and because of his numbers as a high schooler, or Marcus Bingham because of his pro potential. But in terms of guys I actually want to see on the court as freshmen, Gabe Brown and Aaron Henry are my picks for Michigan State. They're both really interesting talents. Gabe Brown has kind of fascinated me, his game since high school. And then Aaron Henry kind of just has, he's got a little old school to him. He's got a lot of versatility, he's a lefty. He can do a lot of things, and I think he could really give Michigan State some interesting looks. So on the Michigan side, I'm still curious to see what Jordan Poole really is, because he put up the numbers last year in the role that he was in, but now he needs to actually be a basketball player, right? Last year he got to play, and I say play in the actual sense, like fun time, you know, go out, chuck up some threes, dance around, have fun, blah, blah, blah. Well, now he's replacing a guy who averaged 36 minutes a game, did everything, in Abdur Rahman. You know, Poole had like some ridiculous number of assists last year, 20 something assists. And I see people continue to say he's going to, take the next step and do this and do that this year. Is that because he made the shot versus Houston, or is that because people really think Jordan Poole's that good? I'll be curious to find out, because when I watched him in Spain, he did a lot of stuff where I said, you know, I didn't see that last year. He went off the bounce with his left hand a few times. He got into the ball in the middle of the floor a few times. He finished against contact, made a couple of nice extra kicks that you didn't really see. But, you know, this is kind of a weird setting to evaluate improvement. So, how much of that translates? Because for all the good I saw, there were also, you know, a lot of completely missed assignments defensively, a lot of chucked three-pointers, some lackadaisical plays. But, you know, who is Jordan Poole is probably one of my biggest questions. But if he really put in the work that he says he did, he could be a guy that really kind of blows up in the Big Ten for sure, and will be a star because he has such star power to him, you know?
Last question for me, Brendan. The Big Ten this year, obviously going to the 20-game schedule. Do you like that? And in the long term, do you think it's good for college basketball, for these leagues to grow even larger and play more games? It seems like in some ways it's going to hurt the mid-major and low-major teams from getting an opportunity to even make the NCAA tournament in the years going forward.
So, 2 points on it. If I had any confidence in some of these, in the majority of high major teams to schedule good games, and good games does not only mean exempt tournaments, you know, good game or league affiliated tournaments, but good games means scheduling home and homes with other high majors or giving legitimate mid majors a chance, at games, even if it's a one off, whatever. If I had any confidence that the bulk of high major teams would actually do things that way, then I would say, yeah, I hate the 20 game schedule. I want there to be more non-conference games, and I want to see, what these leagues are against the rest of the country before they go and prove themselves against each other. But that's just not the way it is. You look at tendencies and scheduling amongst a lot of teams, and you're just always going to have teams that just, you know, you look at like Minnesota schedules, some of them in recent years, and how many teams are going to keep doing that? And that serves no one any good. So, as long as that's the case, then yeah, I mean, I guess I'd rather watch better games, you know, which is essentially what you just get, two extra league games, which I'd rather watch that than, just another bye game. So, on the other point, though, that's on the selection committee. Of if you allow these teams, these conferences, to play 20 games, and that just automatically earns them another bid in the league and takes one away from the A-10 or the Mountain West or whatever. I always get worried listing conferences because I have to remember which ones still exist. But if those bids are taking away bids from those mid-majors, that's on the selection committee for just not being creative enough and not being, I think, tuned in enough to what people want. I think still, if you ask the average college basketball fan, would you rather see the second best team from whatever, the Atlantic 10, or the regular season champion from the OVC who loses in its tournament championship game? Would you rather see that team, or would you rather see, I don't know, ninth place Northwestern from the Big Ten in the tournament? Maybe I'm biased, which I probably am because I like mid-majors, but I still think the average person says they want the mid-major in. So if the conferences want to go 20 games, that's fine, but it still has to be on the selection committee to be cognizant enough to value what the mid-majors are trying to do and give weight to what they are limited in being able to do in building their tournament resume.
Well, Brendan, thank you again for your time. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BF Quinn, read his material on The Athletic. And I think, you know, the biggest outcome from this conversation is that you have definitely piqued the interest of Indiana fans in Ignas Brazdeikis by comparing him to one of our most beloved players, Calvert Chaney, and one of our most loathed in Brian Cardinal. So that was a great comparison for this podcast.
For the record, I did not draw that comparison.
Yes.
That was not me personally. That was a conversation I had. But yes. I wondered if I should have kept that in my pocket the minute I said it on the podcast. But it would certainly make for a fascinating player, no?
Whoa, man, that is for sure if you combine those two. Holy smokes. Holy smokes. Well, thank you, Brendan. We always appreciate your time. And we'll look forward to catching up with you during the season, too, once all these teams actually start playing some games.
Likewise. Look forward to it, guys. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Brendan. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.